Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Adolescence is a time of testing limits and individuating from the family of origin. It's a tumultuous time when peers are more important than parents, and risk-taking behavior is the norm. Parents of today face challenges that are unique. The proliferation of mobile smart devices is a phenomenon that has presented itself rather quickly and without a significant response. The connectivity and access our kids have to information and the mass online socialization they're exposed to present a new landscape for the modern teen to navigate. Our role as parents, however, has not changed. It remains our responsibility to pass on our values and family norms and to provide behavioral boundaries and limits for our children. One of the most important aspects of parenting is parental power and the authority parents have in their home. Trying to be your teen's friend is an approach fraught with peril, and ruling with the wrath of God will only make your children resent you and will drive certain teens to rebel even more. Joining me today to discuss these challenges and to explore the topic of parental power are Anchorage therapists Robert Rhodes, Whitney Whitman, and Dr. Ebony McLean Owens. Whitney Whitman is a licensed professional counselor. She's been working with adolescents and their families in Anchorage for the past decade in residential settings, crisis intervention, and now in private practice. She specializes in the areas of family therapy, group therapy, and self-harm. She also specializes in working with separated or divorcing couples on creating a positive co-parenting plan. She's a member of the Alaska Association of Collaborative Law, the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals, and is a past board member of the Alaska Counseling Association. Robert Rhodes has a 20-year history of providing mental health services to teens and young adults in the Anchorage area. Robert received his master's degree in social work in 1987 from the University of California, Berkeley. He worked in residential treatment for 5 years before moving to outpatient therapy. He's a founding member of Counseling Solutions of Alaska, where he has been in private practice for the last 8 years. Last but not least, Dr. Ebony McLean Owens has her PhD in psychology and is a licensed professional counselor. She began her career at a residential treatment center in 1999. Since that time, she has worked in a variety of settings as a counselor for issues ranging from depression and anxiety to domestic violence and trauma. She has a long history of working with teens and families in a variety of settings. She is currently in practice at Bridges Counseling Connection. In addition to her practice, Dr. McLean Owens is also a visiting professor of psychology at Alaska Pacific University. I want to remind listeners of Line 1 that Dr. Woodard will continue to bring you the latest information on a variety of health topics 3 weeks a month, and I will continue as a monthly host of Line 1, who will typically be sitting in the last Monday of each month. Obviously, we've switched this week because Dr. Woodard's out of town. I hope you'll join me in my panel that's here now, the last week in November, when we tackle part two of our Parenting the Modern Teen series. The focus of that will be the internet, mobile devices, and social media. We'll delve into more detail there. Lastly, if you have questions for today's guests or want to share a comment, you can reach us in several ways. The local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell that out, line1@alaskapublic.org. Thank you guys for being here. I appreciate everybody coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I have with me here assembled a group of people that I think are as well respected in the adolescent mental health field as anybody in town. People who have been my colleagues and who I've worked with and who have come on the show, every one of you at some point came on the show. Robert and I did adolescent mental health, and Ebony was PTSD and parenting. We did two, actually, so this is your third, I think.
It is.
And Whitney, the Divorcing Well show, which I think feeds in a lot to, well, all these kind of, all of them feed into what we're talking about today. I guess first is... why are we here? What's the reason for us being together? And why do we think this discussion is important? Robert?
Well, adolescents are the future. And we all enjoy working with the adolescents and intrigued by what they sort of bring to the table and things like that. So, and increasingly, parents are confused by what's going on social media, et cetera, and as well as all the tasks that adolescents present to them, the acting out and things like that. And so it always seems to be a hot topic and well worth discussing, as they really are the future.
Anybody else? Whitney?
Well, you know, it occurs to me too that you know, adolescence is kind of extending. You know, as we grow, as humans are able to live longer, adolescence goes on for longer, it seems. And you know, at this point, in modern psychology, we talk about adolescence extending all the way up until 26 for some people, depending upon their brain development and their maturation rate. So, I think it's an important topic also to look at from the idea of, you know, how do youth transition? What's that transition into adulthood? How long does that really have to take?
You said there's a term for that.
Transitional youth.
Transitional youth, yeah, is the new sort of catchphrase for that period of 18 to 26.
It's actually 17 to 26. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we used to think of adolescence as the teenage years, 13 to 18. And certainly it's, I think, even starting prior to 13 at this point. I mean, you see preteens, 11 and 12, moving, and I think a lot because of the electronics and the social media, moving into adolescence very quickly, much more rapidly than I think a lot of parents would like. We'd like them to stay young for a little bit longer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of influences that are creating this sort of, and we'll get into a lot more of that on the next show about the social media and the stuff our kids are getting exposed to. Ebony, you got anything to add?
I think they've pretty much covered. Yeah, they've covered it.
I do want to read some statistics, and I think it's important. I've been wanting to do this show for a long time, and I've been really holding out to get the three of you on it because I think you guys know a tremendous amount of this stuff. But the Alaska Statistics, the 2011 Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which is a good resource. And if you refer back to Robert's show, which was on November 24th of 2012, 10 months ago, we have that on there. And I don't think I added it to this one, but it shows a lot of statistics specific to Alaska that really jumped out at me. 23% of Alaskan teens were bullied on school property. 15% have been cyberbullied in the last 12 months. 14% of Alaska teens seriously considered suicide in the last 12 months, and 8.7% attempted. 17% of Alaska high schoolers had their first drink before the age of 13. 16.7% of students had five or more drinks on one or more days in the last 30 days, which constitutes binge drinking, which is exceptionally dangerous for adolescents and young college students. 21% currently use marijuana or have used in the last 30 days. 29% currently drink alcohol, with 17% reporting binge drinking. 23% were offered, sold, or given an illegal drug on school property in the last 12 months. These things jump out at me and alarm me, and I see this stuff in my office every day. Kids abusing alcohol, anger, drugs, really kind of running the show, which is, I think, this four-part series for me is about establishing this first part, parental power, authority. What is it? How have we lost it, and how do we get it back? And then the other two are going to be, we're going to increase in severity for the next two with social media, internet, and then we'll move on to behavioral problems, running away, drugs, alcohol, the big scary ones that have major dire consequences. All right. Those statistics leads me to the thing that I want to ask you guys. What do you see most in your office on a consistent basis? What are the, say, two, three, four things that parents bring their kids in and say this is a problem?
I see a lot of depression and self-harm, suicidal ideation, lowered self-esteem, especially with adolescent young girls. I mean, I think, you know, I know with the adolescent males, I see a lot more of the oppositional defiant conduct disorder behavior, but I'm starting to see some of that with females too at this point. So I know those are some of the top things that I see.
I would add on anxiety to that as well. There's a lot of pressure for teenagers these days. And, you know, I think they really are cognizant of having to move into adulthood and not necessarily feeling secure about that, feeling like they have the skills to do that, even if it's not a conscious thought, but I think it's just a gut feeling for them that they're headed into this unknown abyss. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think along with the depression, we see self-harm. With anxiety, we see self-harm.
For sure.
Yeah.
Robert, what are you seeing?
Well, all of the above. I was thinking of a different subset of kids who are sort of temperamentally or otherwise outside the bell curve, if you will, which presents a lot of problems to the school district, to the parents, in terms of, you know, how do you deal with kids that aren't conventional, if you will. I know that's not necessarily what we were talking about here today, but I call them the kids that fall through the cracks or the square pegs in the round hole world, and it really is difficult, I think, for everybody to understand those kids and sort of address their unique needs.
Well, now, Robert, are you talking about kids that are socially awkward or aren't successful in teenage success terms, the non-popular kids? I mean, is that the non-conventional?
That would certainly be one category. I was actually thinking more of sort of temperamental kids who sort of feel great deal of passion when presented with the word no, have difficulty with transitions, have a hard time managing their mood and things like that. They sort of go from 0 to 10 very quickly, even with small triggers. And that sort of falls outside the typical anger management thing we typically talk about. These are kids that are just wired slightly differently and present real problems for everyone that sort of tries to work with them.
For me, I see a lot of rude, defiant, aggressive behavior that kind of freaks parents out. And Robert, that goes to what you were talking about, when especially this is something that maybe we could just talk about real quick. Parents who have been successful with 2 or 3 kids and then they got this one in the middle or the last one or the first one, it doesn't seem to have any particular order, that just doesn't cooperate. They're raised the same way, same parents, same siblings, same house, and they are full of fire and pushing back. What causes that? It's not a parenting. Other thing I want to be careful of is we're not trying to blame the parents. That's something we really want to stay away from. This is challenging stuff, and we're all, I mean, mine's coming. I got 3 kids, 3 girls that are all going to be in high school at the same time, and I know mine's coming. I think, Whitney or Ebony, one of you, maybe you could see my girls. If I could schedule an appointment right now. But so it's not about, you know, parents, you're doing this wrong and that wrong, but we're just hoping to give ideas on how to regain some of that authority. But what do you do with the kid who's like not fit in the family and he's out of control, or she?
I think, you know, what you bring up for me, this isn't going to answer your question, is the idea that we also have so many influences on our children that are outside of our family system. You know, it's like we could do everything that, you know, within our power, so to say, in the family system to have a good relationship with our child and make sure that they have the tools that they need and the skills that they need to be successful either in adolescence or young adulthood. But they're still influenced by so many things outside of us, you know, the school setting being that, the electronics, the social media. One of the things that comes up for me when I think about, you know, well, we have several kids and there's just this one that's acting out, we don't understand because we're doing the same thing, is it comes back to communication. Like, we have to find out what's going on for that child. That child can tell us, hopefully to some extent, you know, what they need all of the adults in their life to do differently if we can get them to a place where they feel comfortable talking about those things.
Isn't some of that inborn temperament? Some kids are going to up and push back and rebel, and it's sort of ingrained in their biology?
I think absolutely. And maybe I told this story last time. I tell it to practically every family that comes in. The 5-year-old boy, and we can all remember sitting in kindergarten drawing the turkey, you know, putting our hand on the paper and drawing, tracing our fingers to make the turkey, put the eye mouth on, whatever. And he was 5 and just driving everyone in that kindergarten class crazy. And his mom said to me, my son's a son that will never, ever sit quietly and draw the turkey. Mm-hmm. He wants to learn how to hunt. He wants to be taught turkey behavior. He wants to know how to, you know, operate a gun. He wants to be able to clean and cook and et cetera, the turkey. And that's his learning style. And, you know, one size doesn't fit all. And I admire the school district for, you know, having some interesting charter schools and other kind of programs. But it's incumbent on the school district in that case, or parents, or all of us who are working with those kids, to sort of identify their respective needs and their particular needs and look at them not as a one-size-fits-all, but as, you know, as someone that, this is a kid that wanted to learn. You know, he went to kindergarten like everybody else. Please the teacher, get the star at the end of the day, have his parents proud of him.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of, you know, being able to embrace each child's individual differences. And I think a lot of times when you do have families, they do say, we've been doing this with all of our other kids, except this one just does not adhere to the rules that we set. And I think it is really about the communication piece and embracing the fact that all of your children are going to be different, and that what you do for one child may not work for the other child.
You can't parent them all the same way.
Well,
that's inconvenient.
It is.
Because it's hard enough to parent. I mean, it's hard enough to parent all of them the same way.
Well, I can tell you, I was the inconvenient kid for my parents. I was very much an independent kid. And my mom will say to me to this day, you were a very hard child to parent. Mm-hmm. What worked with you for you didn't work for your brother. He was easy. You were hard.
So Ebony was the square peg in the round hole.
That's right.
World. But what I would have said to Ebony's parents is, do yourself a favor, right, just from the parents' perspective, and meet her where she is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And again, quit trying to sort of put her in the round hole when she's a square peg, because you're not going to succeed. It's going to cause, you know, endless conflict and tension in the family. Meet her where she is and make your life less miserable.
That reminded me
I wish you had been around for them.
That reminded me of a quote that, and I don't remember where it was because I don't have it written down, but it was something about how our job as parents is to lead our children to their path, mm-hmm. to their individual path, not to put them on ours.
Well, you know, that That's reminds right. me of sometimes when I think about, you know, some of the parents that have come to me, the most frazzled and the most stressed out about the choices that their children are making that are very high risk, like we've talked about drugs and alcohol and things like that. And it seems to me like it's just a time of survival for parents sometimes. Like, how do we get them to adulthood alive? How do we get them to adulthood in one piece? How do we as the family survive this time in our family's life, right? Because we all know that things calm down at some point, right? You know, at 25, you're going to have a different perspective on your parents than you did at 15. But it does seem like there's these high school years are somewhat couched in survival at this point.
For a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then families.
For kids who are struggling and for the families who are struggling right along with them, it does sometimes seem like it's a survival.
All right. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guests today are Anchorage therapists Whitney Whitman, LPC, Robert Rhodes, who is an LCSW, and Dr. Ebony McLean Owens. We are discussing parenting the modern teen. The focus of today's show is parental power, how we lost it, how to get it back. I'd like to take a minute to remind listeners you can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. Local phone number 550-8433. Or toll free at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. I also want to point out we have online, if you go on the website and click on line one and Parenting the Modern Teen, we have quite a few links on one's called The Decline and Fall of Parental Authority, Empowering Parents, Parental Power, How to Keep It and Get It, or How to Get It and Keep It. So, surviving your child's adolescence, there's lots of links there that lead to other things and can give you some great information and ideas and tips for parenting the willful or the difficult adolescent. So check that out. And you can also reach to find out information on our guests here. Whitney, we didn't get your website on here. It's an easy one, though. It's whitneywhitman.com, right?
Yes, and it's in process of being updated. So come in a month instead of now. It'll be much prettier.
So it won't be that lame thing you have there
yeah,
now?
Yeah, right.
Do you have a real web person doing it?
Yeah.
All right, getting back to what we were talking about. So the common things that we've looked at are school failure, low self-worth and self-harm. Those are the big ones, depression, anxiety. Interesting thing, the 2013 Alaska survey, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey came out just recently, and we do have some goals in safety at school. So kids feeling afraid of school has gone up, and feeling sad and helpless or hopeless has also gone up. Suicide's about the same. The good news is drugs, alcohol, binge drinking, all down, and especially over the last 5 years since.
Yeah, that's good.
So you can go on there and look at that information. The Alaska is it a risk behavior survey? And that's done through some folks at UAA. I think Dr. Woodard had him. You can find the that link on Dr. Woodard's show on, I don't remember when it was. Maybe we can find that.
You know, those statistics bring up for me, you know, brain development. Yes. You know, when you hear these statistics where kids are engaging in high-risk behaviors, and when you hear statistics about how they're feeling intensely, right, whether it be sad or hopeless or joyful and excited, that has a lot to do with brain development. And I think that that's also the scary thing about things like binge drinking or, you know, marijuana use, is that those things can impede brain development at a time when things are shifting and changing very rapidly. But, you know, neurologically, adolescents are living in their limbic system. And for those of you that don't know what or where that is, it's kind of in the center of the brain. And it's what makes us feel pleasure and excitement and inspired. It's just, it's kind of a central feeling environment. And the frontal cortex, which rests in the front of your brain, right kind of above your eyes or so, that's what allows you to filter things, like, you know, so you don't say something stupid without thinking, or, you know, that you don't behave in a way where, you know, you're going to hurt someone's emotions or feelings. It's also the area of the brain that we use where we think about future consequences. If I do this, what might happen down the line? If I don't do this, what might happen down the line? And the average teenager doesn't have much of a frontal cortex, let alone a fully developed one. In fact, that's that whole transitional youth that we're seeing now, as neurology is finding out that the frontal cortex may not be fully developed until your mid-20s. And so a lot of the things that we're expecting teenagers to do, make good choices, you know, have good social skills, treat everyone with respect, that's just not really capable. It's not something they're necessarily capable of.
Well, there's... Yeah, brain development's important. It also, the frontal lobe also controls impulse, decision-making. So that's why, and moderation, I mean, that's why teenagers' behavior is risky and the consequences are so severe, because they do things in such excess.
Right.
And be that mood, behavior. And I think that's one of the things parents have a hard time with, is the excessive reactivity and overreaction of kids.
And because that prefrontal cortex is not quite fully developed, they also don't recognize the consequences of the behaviors that they're taking. So that impulse is there without the, wow, what happens if I do this? What comes after? They're not thinking about that.
But there's a lot of kids who are successful and are doing all these things. Is it as simple as their prefrontal cortex is more developed at an earlier age? Or, I mean, some kids seem to come out of the womb and they do what they're supposed to do and they are responsible and polite. And I mean, we all know those kids. What's the difference?
Well, that's the $1 million question, really, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think we all know what the blueprint is for raising a successful child and launching them into adulthood. But honestly, why one launches successfully and the other one might struggle along the way, I haven't figured out the answer to that.
Especially when there are two kids in the same house. We see that so often. How do you?
There are so many variables. I mean, yes, part of it could be genetics. Yes, part of it could be brain wiring and development. Part of it could be personality and character. I mean,
and environment and nurturing.
Yeah, right. And there's so many variables that we can't say this is what it is. We might get close to that with a specific child, a specific family, as we uncover and kind of, you know, do the research into what's happening for this child.
I will say this. It's sort of what I was saying before. We have this sort of this conventional way of thinking that, you know, at age 18, you sort of leave the house and you pursue some kind of vocation, or you go to college, and you better have graduated from high school in exactly 4 years from the high school you attended originally, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I don't want to keep harping on this, but one size doesn't fit all. And maybe that's some of our problems, is we just keep to this conventional thinking. And not two of the kids are ready to leave at 18 and go to college, and one isn't. And so at some point, the onus is on me to recognize that and take that burden off the 18-year-old who's, you know, going to follow in his sibling's footsteps when he's not ready or she's not ready.
So you're talking about parenting the child that you have versus parenting the child that you think you have or you hope you have or you, like...
Or culturally, we're told we should have.
Right.
Right.
And I think that is a form of empowerment, you know? If you can stop and look at your child... and say, you know, oh, this is what's going on for them. I'm going to try to meet them there, as you were talking about earlier. That's empowering, because at least you know what the goal is. The goal is, I'm going to try to meet this child where they are, as opposed to force them into that shaped box that I want them to fit into.
All right. I think this is a good spot to take our 30-minute break. So I'm going to remind folks that you are listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. Our local number is 550-8433, toll free at 1-888-353-5752, and email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will continue our conversation with our guests, Robert Rhodes, Whitney Whitman, and Dr. McLean Owens. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. In case you're just joining us, I have in studio Robert Rhodes, Whitney Whitman, and Dr. McLean Owens. Today we are discussing parental power and the challenges of parenting the modern teen. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to bring you relevant health information on Line 1, your health connection, 3 Mondays every month, and I will continue to sit in as a host for a show focused on mental health 1 week a month. Please remember that your participation in the show will add considerably, so feel free to call in if you got a question about parental power or adolescent health and wellness. You can reach us locally at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, if you're listening between 9 and 10 p.m. on Monday evening, you will be hearing a tape recording. Also, if you want to email us, you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org, and we will read your question on the air. Before the break, we're talking a little bit about, teenagers and brain development. So let's move right into the developmental tasks from there of teenagers versus childhood. And when we talk about developmental tasks, we talk about certain things that kids need to achieve and to attain before they can move into a successful adulthood, right? And if these things don't get met or they don't develop these skills, then they're going to have some challenges. So let's talk a little bit, whoever wants to go, Dr. McLean Owens, why don't you go ahead with some developmental tasks of adolescents, which for the purpose of our discussion is 13 to well, now 26, since Whitney changed it all up on us, but which is an interesting way to think about adolescence, and I guess it makes sense since brain development is not fully complete.
I think when I think about adolescence in terms of the developmental task, I think one of the biggest ones is the self-identity. Like, you know, getting to know who you are in this age. I made a joke earlier before we started that there are several times in my life that I thought I was grown. 13 was the first time, and that was the time that I actually, peers mattered more to me than, you know, my parents, and I was highly influenced by what they thought I should look like, how I should dress, you know, the ways I should fit in. And so when I think about adolescence, I think about that being the time to get to know who you are, like you're exploring, it's that journey.
Which is difficult for parents, because in childhood, we look up, we have these two godlike, or one, or, I don't know, different family styles, but we look up at our parents as these, you know, all-knowing, all-being creatures. They're very godlike, and we get our values and our morals and our thank yous and our pleases. Everything we do comes from them. Adolescence, there's a pushback. I know when mine happened, you know, 12, 13, I started pushing back and starting to think that I was the man. And like you, Ebony, that was about time, my first time I thought I was
the
man.
That's right.
So how to, I mean, that's the pushback piece. That's the individuation piece that I talked about in the intro.
And you know, that I mean, yes, individuation is almost like the umbrella under which all the other developmental tasks are happening, right? And that being that the child at some point has to figure out who are they separate from their parents, even. And and to me, that's balanced very much. You know, that whole pushback thing is balanced by the amount of responsibility that parents start allowing their children to have. And I think that in the early adolescence, that's a very difficult thing because you're so used to taking care of things for your kids throughout their elementary and maybe into middle school time period. You know, you're making them lunches, you're helping them pick out their clothes, you're making sure they brush their teeth, you're doing all these normal parenting things, and then suddenly you realize that you have to stop doing that for them. And I think that's where I see some parents struggle, is in, you know, in allowing for the balance of responsibility, because it's much harder for a teenager to point the finger and blame you for everything if they're having to do it themselves. If you're taking care of everything for them, then it's very easy for them to blame you for everything that's not going well, in their opinion. So to me, that helps somewhat.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I always say to the families or to the parents, I want to work it and get to the point where the teenager can come in here and tell me honestly that they screwed up.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of coming in and telling me how their parents screwed up.
Right.
Right? And so we want to sort of make something very clear and concise and predictable and consistent and put it in their laps and let them do what they do with it, and then look in the mirror, so to speak. And to me, that's real growth, and it also focuses on the real issue, not the parents are, you know, ruining my life.
And you just brought up the million-dollar word of consistent.
Exactly. Right. You want to be able to shift some of that accountability and responsibility back to the adolescent. So I agree that, you know, you don't want to overparent. However, this is the time when parents get the fear and the anxiety when they start, their kids start to get that individuation, that they want to overparent and control, which only causes more opposition, you know. So I mean, it's difficult.
I'm amazed by the number of young people and the intelligence and the insight that they have when they come in and they sit down and you say, so you've done this and, you know, this, and does that seem like a good plan? And they say, absolutely not. And like, I mean, they know it, they have the insight, but they somehow think, and I think that's part of the adolescence, that lack of prefrontal cortex, is this invincibility, this sense that I got this under control. Like, mm-hmm. Right. I know I'm screwing up, I know I'm making some bad choices, but I got this, Robert, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, just chillax and let my parents chill out, everybody just leave me alone, I got this.
Oh yeah.
If you just leave me alone, I'd make good grades. That's the right one I hear the most often.
Oh, yeah. It's sort of like, it's a power struggle. They get into this, if my parents will let me do what I want, then I will come home on time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that it's not all manipulative. I mean, sometimes we paint with a broad brush. The kids are just, I mean, I think when a teenager comes in and says, quit nagging me, quit harassing me about homework, just leave me alone, I'll take care of it, I don't interpret that as they're manipulating or trying to lie or something like that. I think really in their heads, that's their plan.
Isn't it also part of the developmental tasks, one of those developmental tasks, that teenagers need to have a sense of independence and competency and ability to manage their own lives? They're trying that out. Parents come in and overmanage and that causes a pushback from the kid. Leave me alone. And your parent is the closest person and they are the authority figure. That's why the four of us have such an easy time with other people's children.
Right.
Exactly.
Because they talk, I have conversations that parents would love to have with their kids every day.
Well, and parents would love to not nag and chase the kid
exactly
around all night with the homework. I'm certainly not blaming the parent there. And what typically happens is if the parent does back off at first, the kid struggles.
Well, that's what I'm saying by the parents would love to have these conversations. It's not that they don't want to or aren't available for it. The kid won't talk to them. Mm-hmm. They will... No, go away, angry, hostile, aggressive, and then come and sit in my office and have a really intellectual, philosophical conversation about life and choices.
Well, and I think, Robert, you brought up the idea that, you know, sometimes when we get hands off, you know, at first the kid struggles. And I think that's also a really great moment in adolescent development, is for the child to see the natural and logical consequences that occurs when the parents stop micromanaging them. And I'll often say it because it's very scary. I mean, as a parent myself, the thought of allowing my child to like fail, you know, algebra because I'm no longer going to harp on them to do their algebra homework is a very scary prospect. But I encourage people to do it because I'd rather have my child fail algebra in ninth grade than fail algebra their freshman year of college when we're all paying for it. So, you know, me, it's again that allowing for mistake and allowing for consequence during that time period actually helps out in young adulthood, I think.
And I know I do quite a bit of that in terms of experiential, right? Let's try this out and see what happens. And what I find too, especially with some of my older adolescents, is that they'll come back and they'll tell me that was an epic fail, right? Now tell me what was an epic fail about it. And they say, I needed my mom. I should have probably asked her for help. I should have done these things, right? And so in hindsight, they're able to see, then you can kind of create that balance. You know, this is where the child needs you. And we talk about you being open in your communication. I need your help in this, but not so much here. Please back out a little here, but help me here. And I think, you know, it's important for them to have those experiences so that they, just like Whitney said, you know, they learn early rather than later in life.
Well, how do we learn things? Trial and error, right? We have to try things on and see if they fit. And kids are trying to develop their own sense of morality, incorporate the messages from society, the messages from their peers, the messages from their parents, and incorporate that into their own unique ideals of the world and their value system and all that. And so they're supposed to question their parents at that age, right?
Oh, yeah.
That is individuation. Yeah. Is, you know, I'm going to test these limits so I can see where I actually am willing to cross over the line. I mean, come on, the greatest inventions were because someone was willing to cross over a line, right, and take a risk and maybe blow up their little house that they were building, whatever they were building in. So, you know, that's how we keep forward thinking as a species, is that we test and we take risks, and that's their developmental job. How we respond to it as parents, I think, is a big, it makes a big difference.
And I like to encourage kids to healthy risk taking, because, you know, they start off taking all these risks that are dangerous, and then we talk about the consequences of that, and then what does healthy risk taking look like? You could still take risks, but they don't have to be so damaging. So,
yeah, it's the risks that are scary. Robert said we have time on our side the last time. That's what you tell parents, and I tell parents, keep them alive till they're 25, and then they have a really good fighting chance.
That's right.
It's really hard though for the parent to look at the report card that comes out at the end of the semester and say, "Oh, I'm going to be patient.
Yeah, I have one.
I'm going to back off and let this process unfold." So I understand that the stakes are high.
Yeah, especially looking at 10 years, you know. I've had parents say, "Ted, you want me to wait 10 years for my kids to be able to make good, sound decisions?"
And for it to like me again?
When you make me think, Robert, too, when you talk about looking at that report card, I mean, gosh, we could all imagine, like, how that affects your self-esteem as a parent. Like, oh, my child's failing these classes. Like, what does that say about me? Or I'm trying so hard here, and, what, you know, it's really hard.
And they get that message from people in the community. You know, the neighbor, the extended family member, the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's subtle, I think, but it's there.
Yeah, I agree.
It hurts me deeply when my kids struggle and when they fail. I remember sitting outside the school and looking in through the window at Rylan. Was just kind of standing there looking at all her friends, wanting, you know, and nobody was playing with her. And I just wanted to cry. I wanted to go in there and grab her and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When they talk about, like, being a parent is like wearing your heart on the outside of your body.
Totally.
You know?
Painful. Well, yeah. I want to remind listeners, if you want to get in a question today, you want to get a call in, where you're going to need to get it in pretty soon. The local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, or email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. I want to jump ahead to parenting styles. I think most people are, though listeners might not be familiar with the different parenting styles. There's four generally accepted parenting styles, and I want to just briefly talk about those, but then focus on the authoritative one. Does somebody want to take a stab at describing some of these?
I know we've talked about, like, the difference in authoritarian parenting, which is kind of the everything that I say goes, and you have
kids are seen and not heard.
No input, exactly. The permissive is, you know, do it what you want. You know, kind of, I'm hands off. I'm just going to let you find your own way. And then we talk about, like, the authoritarian as being that balance between those two styles.
And then there's the passive or the non-involved parent. Those are the four: authoritarian, permissive, authoritative. And for our purposes, I mean, really the ideal, the one that I teach parents or talk to parents about, is authoritative. And for me, it's because it has high expectations, but it also is responsive to emotional needs and to nurturing.
So So as we're going through those, I mean, I'm thinking about, well, where does respect fit in there, you know? And I think, you know, a question that I'm often working on with parents is, how do you build respect? How do you know, my kid disrespects me. We do everything for them. We have them in soccer. We have them in this. We have them in that. We send them to the best school we can send them in, and yet they don't treat us very nicely, and that's a kind way of putting it. And I think that comes back to, like, the type of intimacy that you have with your child and how much you're willing to talk with them about difficult subjects, even if they don't want to talk with you about it, the fact that you're willing to bring it up. I think also being willing to admit as a parent when you've made a mistake or when you wish you'd done something differently, and being really transparent about that. I'm just touching on this, and this would be a whole radio show in and of itself, I suppose. But I think when we start talking about, you know, being authoritative or authoritarian, that's that issue of respect and the type of respect that you have comes up.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that a lot of parents who are the more authoritative type, when it works well when their kids are little, the kids are in line, they're dialed in, but the 14-year-old.
Are you talking about authoritarian?
Mm-hmm. Or yes, authoritarian. Right. Sorry. Yeah. But the 14-year-old or the 15-year-old, when they stand up against this person, they are angry. And they are resentful, and mm-hmm. they have lots of bad feelings, and the pushback or the blowback is even worse.
Talk about what Whitney was saying about, that respect factor. When you are an authoritarian parent, you're getting superficial compliance, so there's oftentimes very little respect from that child anyway, right? They're doing what you say out of fear.
Talking about demanding respect versus
exactly.
earning.
Exactly. Right. So respect. How is it earned? I think, you know, when you think about the authoritarian parent, there's an ability for a child to earn respect, and for a parent to earn respect from a child, because there's that nurturing environment. And then there's also, these are your limits, and you can work within these limits. And then, you know, when I think about having family sessions, we talk about negotiating, like rules, house rules and boundaries, and involving the child in that. Mm-hmm. And I also like to involve them in their consequences, mm-hmm. because what I've told parents a lot of times, let them set them. They'll yeah. often be more strict than yours ever were. And it's really amazing that if you give them some of their own power, what they come up with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So parental power is not about asserting your might.
That's right.
I would say no.
Parental authority is not about having the biggest stick.
No.
Then how do we get it? How do we earn it? What if we've lost it? I mean, because I think a lot of parents lose it because they're busy, because maybe the permissive parent is trying to make up for something that happened to them in childhood, and so they're going to overindulge their kid because they didn't have anything, and their parents, abuse them, so they're very gentle with their kids. Mm-hmm. And then those kids grow up entitled, and, you know, we have a whole another set of, and they do what they want, mm-hmm. essentially. So if you've done that, how do you get it back once this kid starts into the 13 and they start to push back and you come in? Because I have it all the time. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I can't handle this. Something's got to change.
Well, if you start from the notion that families work best when there's an executive branch, the parents, and they're sort of setting the guidelines, expectations for how the family runs, that's where I start, very, very simply and basic. What are the rules? What are the consequences? Are the consequences delivered in a swift and sure kind of way? Are they followed through on? What's the other side of the coin, sort of the nurturing, more loving side of the family, and the communication piece and the presence piece that we ask parents to be with their children? And that's how I think about it. Boundaries, clear expectations, clear consequences, and let's transfer the power back to the executive branch of the family and everyone's better off, including the children. Although I can't really convince them of that yet. That's how I think about it, step by step, piece by piece. Collect the data. Mm-hmm. You know, what works, what doesn't work. This worked with this child, didn't work with that one. That's okay. Go back to the drawing board. Because the essence is always the same. We're in control, and we're setting the expectations for the family. And, you know, and there's rewards and consequences for behaviors.
One of the most successful things, interventions I have, is when I ask a kid, what would you do if you were your child? Like, how would you set this mm-hmm. consequence, or what would you expect? Would you let your kid be out till 2 or 3 in the morning? And the answer is invariably what a parent would say. Mm-hmm. They know this stuff. The executive branch doesn't mean that kids can't be heard or listened to.
No, absolutely not. Just the opposite, as Ebony was saying. As they, you know, as they grow into adolescence, we want them to
participate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's that responsibility piece that I was getting to. It's like if you can balance, you know, having some power, so to say, with also giving your child responsibility and making them a part of the system in that way. I think that's what engages the adolescent. That's what allows the adolescent to feel like, oh, this is a worthwhile thing for me to invest in, you know. Because just as much as, you know, we're talking about this idea of, you know, it might sound as we're talking about making change in parental power, like consequences. We're talking about consequences and expectations, and there's rules and things are going to happen to you if you don't shape up, right? But the other flip side of that is, and here's the privileges you can earn if you do. Because that's what we as adults are living. We're living in a system in which if I go to work every day, I get a paycheck at some point, right? And so in a sense, we kind of need to create a token economy for our kids. Like, yes, if you do this bad thing, these bad consequences may happen or will happen. But if you can, you know, at least make your best attempt at trying to acquire and sustain some of these good things, then these other good things can happen for you.
Exactly.
And I think you have to tie those together as the parent of a teenager. You have to make that real clear, like, hey, if you're failing algebra, I'm not going to pay for comp soccer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to comp soccer, I suggest that we work on algebra.
Yeah, right. And I think you also, you know, I like to ask my clients, the adolescents, what your goals are. A lot of times they'll have these goals that are so inconsistent with the current behaviors. Then I ask them, how is what you're doing right now allowing you to get there? And that's a way for them to actually go back and start thinking about, like, what I'm doing in the present actually affects that future. And then we look at what changes you'll make in order to get to that goal that you've set for yourself. You know, so I think that's part of giving them back some of that responsibility and mm-hmm. accountability for their own behavior.
Bill Cosby said, parents are people who yell and they yell and they yell and they yell, and you already have the point and they're still yelling. Love Bill Cosby. Parents that yell and yell and yell and yell, that's not parental power.
No.
That creates, I mean, kids turn them off,
kids
tune them out.
Kids get desensitized to that quickly.
It's like Charlie Brown's mom, our teacher. Womp, 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 right?
Yeah.
I think it's important when I have parents come in and they talk about the difficulties they're having in communicating with their child or children, regardless of what that difficulty is, the first thing we kind of look at is how are the parents communicating with each other, whether divorced or married? You know, what is the communication style that the children are seeing role modeled for them? Because a lot of times, as soon as parents shift that and make change in that, by default, the children will make change.
Oh, yeah.
I found this great, and it's on this resource, the five basics of parenting adolescents, and I just wanted to read this to folks. It is online. I'm not sure exactly where, but I did find it. It's in one of our resources. Five basics of parenting adolescents: love and connect. So offer support and acceptance while affirming the teen's increasing maturity. Monitor and observe. So that speaks to, you know, letting teens know that you're paying attention. You're aware of what's going on. You're present, right? They can't get away with stuff. Guide and limit, uphold clear boundaries while encouraging increased competence. Model and consult, which is just what you're talking about, which I think is so important. How do parents treat each other? How do parents treat and talk to their kid? Provide continual support for decision making, teaching by example, and ongoing dialogue. Provide and advocate. Provide a supportive home environment and a network of caring adults.
Mm. That's probably really challenging sometimes. I would think that last one would be my biggest challenge. You know, networks. I mean, we're talking about the modern teen.
Right.
Networks and social support and community are all very disjointed, I would say, in modern life.
Well, especially in Alaska, I think.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of those five parenting tips really are the authoritative parenting style. I mean, it is about paying attention, nurturing, loving, disciplining, consistency. Whitney, you said consistency. Was that the word?
Well, Robert mentioned it, and to me, that's like the million-dollar word.
In parental power.
In parental power, yes. And
why?
Because, again, we're talking about the adolescent pushback and them wanting to test limits. And, you know, they may not, like I think it was Robert, too, talking about they're not intending to be manipulative, but it's very easy for a child to manipulate when you're not being consistent. And a lot of times they will, you know, not even realize that we're giving in because we're tired or we're giving in because we just don't want to have this argument again. But every time we do that, we give them power. You know, so if I've told you that you can't have your smartphone after 9 o'clock at night, and then just because I don't want to have to deal with, you know, the pushback that you're going to give me, I give into it. I just gave you the silent message that if you push back, I will give in.
Exactly. You reinforce that behavior. It's what I refer to as the emotional apocalypse. And a lot of parents fall for that, right? So they don't want to deal with the behaviors. They don't want to deal with the emotions. So they just... You know, so I think if you establish rules, what we always talk about when we negotiate and establish those rules, does it matter if we establish them if you're not going to follow through with them? There has to be consistency in it.
And holding your kids accountable and making sure that you be consistent with your follow through is if you tell your kid you can't go out and
That's
they
right.
walk out, then what? Do you call the police?
That depends upon the circumstances. I feel like that's another show, too.
That is another show. And we're going to do that show in two shows from now.
Okay.
We're going to talk about those things. Mm-hmm. But it is about making the tough call. And when your kid has a temper tantrum in the store, to be able to have other parents just watch that mm-hmm. happen while you read your book or, you know, pick up a magazine mm-hmm. while your kid is, you know, melting down, then you walk away.
That's mm-hmm. right.
So consistency. All right. Closing thoughts. I mean, we're kind of running out of time already, believe it or not. It happens every time. Parental power, closing thoughts. Anybody want to leave something for our listeners?
You know, I'm sitting here now thinking that in a way what we've been talking about is sharing the power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what builds respect and that's what increases communication and that's what allows for you to have those negotiations with your adolescent. You know, that it's not just about that authoritarian style. It's about I'm willing to negotiate and work and collaborate with you and then maintaining that executive branch idea,
right.
like
final Robert's. Decision's mine,
yes,
but we can work.
But we can work on this.
Yeah.
That's earning respect versus demanding it.
And it's right. And it is a sharing of the power, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a good model. The parent puts the child in position to argue their case, if you will. The parent's goal mm-hmm. is to listen. The kid's goal, the goal for the child is to present the case respectfully. The parent weighs it, comes up with a decision, and then the kid's job is to accept the decision.
Exactly.
But that's a nice model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're participating, the children, and sometimes they prevail.
Ebony?
Well, I mean, I think they've kind of summed it up for me. Those are the thoughts that I have is that, you know, you do share the power. You do allow the kids to have a voice, and it does create an environment for respect. And I think you gain more, you know, compliance than with authoritarian, do as I say. With that, you just get opposition.
So it's okay to negotiate. It's not a good idea to yell or fight with your children.
Power struggles. No.
Power struggles are the big one. Pick your battles.
That's right.
And love your kids. Provide structure, support, consistency. That kind of sums it up. All right. My thanks to today's guest, Robert Rhodes from Counseling Solutions of Alaska, Dr. Ebony McLean Owens from Bridges Counseling Connection, and Whitney Whitman, who is by herself independently in practice. If you would like to continue today's conversation, join KSK on Facebook. You can find the link on our website at alaskapublic.org. You can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We welcome any and all feedback on today's show. I think the thing I want to leave parents with and have them take from this is that the number one contributing factor to a child's success is the positive involvement of their parents. It's up to us as parents, I think, whether single, divorced, blended, gay, cohabitating, or traditional, to provide consistency, structure, and security for our children. They may not like it, and they certainly won't during teen years, but their adult selves will thank you for helping their adolescent selves regulate and manage their behavior while they were unable to do so. Parental power does not come from might or ruling with an iron fist. You do not have to always be right. or to pick every battle. It comes from being the adult in the home and providing clear, age-appropriate behavioral guidelines and emotional safety for your child from birth to adulthood. It's important to consider that your adult children's opinion of you is based on how well you did caring for them when they could not do it for themselves. Dr. Woodard will return next week when his guest will be Anchorage pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Matthew Benson. They will be discussing thyroid disease in childhood. So why not tune into your health and learn more Monday, October 21st at 2 p.m., repeating at 9 p.m. on 91.1 KSKA Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Remember, never climb a tree to look for a fish. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.